straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 192, brought to you by Hook'em.com, our good friends at Bud Light. My name's Cedric Golden, and I'm joined by my boy, the Duck, Kirk Bowles. And Duck, big news coming out of college football. We know the Longhorns are on a bye. You wanted to go ahead and talk about this Big Ten thing? Let's just get it out of the way before we get to the Longhorns in the bye week.
Wait. Big Ten's not playing now. They're playing, and what? Is pandemic over?
What happened to the scientists and the medical professionals? The Big Ten, oh my God, they put the kids first and they did the right thing. But all of a sudden, October 24th, they're back playing tackle football, dog.
Well, I've heard they're going to change their name from Big Ten to the Big Wishy Washy.
take a note from the Big 12. You know what we did down here, Doug? We made a tough call, and we have football season going on. Mm-hmm. And now, all of a sudden, the conference that's been the leader, the old guy, the old sage,
yep.
Big Ten is now voted to return to the field. And little brother, Pac-12, they're going to try to finish up these wildfires and some testing protocols, and they're talking about mid-November.
Maybe the Big Ten should change their thing to On Second Thought.
Wow. On Second Thought, I think we're going to play football.
It's not a good look for the Big Ten. It's like, well, it's improved so much in the last month. Well, has it improved that much?
No. Yes,
the rapid testing has improved. I'll give them that. But
the spread?
The spread's still there. The scare's still there. And
college campuses are non-compliant. The kids are still partying. They're not masking up. And so the dangers are still there. But what they saw last week, Duck, is life went on without them.
Yeah.
And they knew the Big 12 – played the positive reviews, and I'm saying positive in the right sense of the word, reviews, and the ACC got it done, and a lot of these little conferences got it done as well, including the ever-powerful Sun Belt. That's for another conversation.
Cool.
But college football went on without them.
Yeah, they were afraid of being left behind, Cedric. They were left out. And the Big Ten players and coaches are watching it play out in front of their eyes, and they were pissed off. And the Big Ten finally heard their voices. And don't think the Ryan Days of the world weren't putting pressure on their, you know, ADs and presidents and chancellors to traverse themselves. And it's a bad look, you know. And but I don't know. In a way, though, even though we may chastise them for this reversal, we win because we get to see more big-time football. Now, there are tons of issues with this. There are 8 games, supposedly, with no bye weeks in between.
That's crazy. What
are the chances of postponements, cancellation? Baylor's playing on Saturday. You're going to be at the Baylor-Houston game. It's Dave Aranda's third first game on the schedule, and they finally going to get to the field. So
I'm doubling up on those on my masks in Wake. I haven't been around people for a long time. I'll have a couple of friends over, and we're all masked up, and I'm around my family. But I mean, I don't know if our people know this. I haven't seen you in person in 6 months.
I know it.
Is that nuts?
It's been glorious. It really has.
Thank God for Zoom.
So thanks for the invite. You have close friends over, but I'm still
That's a poker game, and you don't play.
I forgot your gambling addiction. I forgot about this. So I know you, Cedric, seriously, you've been as cautious as any of my friends and anybody that I know. And my wife and I have been to 2 restaurants, and both in the last 3 weeks with family members, and otherwise we haven't gone out either. So I don't know. I think I don't know if the scare or the fear is diminishing, but you and I talked before we started taping. There's a lot of traffic in Austin.
Traffic's back, Kirk.
It is back.
It's back, so, dog.
So I don't you think in people's minds, they think, the majority think, well, we're over the hump. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Because, and the problem with that thought process, in my opinion, is you think we're over the hump because you want to be over the hump. You don't have a lot of data to support that you're over the hump. Some of the positive tests are down, but it's still spreading. And we have a fundamental problem on college campuses and with people who have turned it into a political issue. Our president holds a rally in Nevada with over 1,000 people indoors, lots of them without masks. That's part of the problem and not the solution. And it's even worse, and I'm not trying to make this political, but it's even worse when he told Bob Woodward earlier this year that this thing is a monster. But he gave a different face publicly. And there are sheep out there that are going to follow him because they believe in him. And there's nothing wrong with believing in your president. But when your president is lying to us, that's a problem.
Well, he says he didn't want to set off panic.
I'd rather panic and be informed than be a calm guy that got lied to, Duck.
Thank you. We want to know the truth, and we can deal with it, okay? And that's something he shouldn't be denying the American public. We both agree with that. So I don't know. In my mind, I'd like to think we're over the hump. Not that it's safe right now. I'm going to keep wearing my mask. And like you said, we haven't seen each other in 6 months. So, you know, I don't know. Do you, let me ask you this. The NFL, you know, went off without a hitch week one. I think they had one positive test, you know, the week before they started up play. Do you think football is safe right now, Sid?
I think pro football is a lot safer than college football because I think the pro football players, and we've got Houston Chronicle longtime columnist John McClain is going to be joining us in our next segment. We'll talk about the Texans Ravens. But I think that pro football is safer because you have grown-ups making grown-up decisions for money, and there's a lot more responsible people. And there's 32 owners who have already agreed that we're going to make sure we keep our guys in line. Not as many social temptations as an 18 to 22 year old college kid who just got invited to a house party this weekend with a lot more free time. So there's more buy-in with the pros. I love what Tom Herman's done at Texas, and we're going to talk about the bye week a little later. I love what Tom Herman's done with Texas, but that is the exception, and I don't think it's the norm.
And you're talking fewer players with 53-man roster, and they're not on a college campus. You know, sharing a campus and classrooms with thousands of other students. And
they can hunker down and be in one group setting.
They can. And we've watched a lot of football and a lot of sports so far. And I was at the Texas game Saturday. They had 15,377. I don't know if it looked like that many on television. But
it didn't. It looked empty.
And I was at the SMU-Texas State game, and you saw a lot of people without masks. And I think we're seeing that on a lot of these football games that are televised. There are lots of fans there without masks. So I know they're feeling safer, but
me personally don't feel safe yet. I'm compromised. I'm pre-diabetic, and I'm a fat guy. I'm a big dude, and I've got some health issues. I feel great, but the virus comes after people who are not in great shape, and minorities have been hit really hard.
Yeah.
By it because of their, you know, maybe because of their, I don't know, physical makeup, their traditional diet. I don't know. But the numbers say minorities have been hit pretty hard. That's why I've been a little bit more cautious than a lot of people. I've been in a grocery store maybe five or maybe 10 times at the most since February. I've been doing curbside, Duck.
Yeah.
I do curbside. They bring it to my car and they put it in the back. And when I go to our, I miss our little Wednesday Chinese lunches that we've had for 10 to 15 years, but I've been getting that to go. They bring it out to the car.
And we're seeing smaller, inclusive people in press boxes, too. Brian Davis and I were at the Texas game while you and Danny were covering it from home. You know the row we sit on. There were two SID types from UTEP at the far end, and then there were four riders on our row. And wouldn't you guess there's probably, what, 15 riders, something like that, on our row alone? One of six rows in the press box?
Oh, yeah, there's 40. There's usually like our row is always like 15 riders, and then the row above us is usually like 8 to 10. And then the TV guys sit down below us on that front row, and there's always 8 to 10 of them. So you're probably talking about 10, 20, 35 on our side on most games. But if it's a big game, it's way more than that.
They had maybe 24 riders total in the Texas press box. So, like I said, we were very spread out, very distant. I bet it was, you know, I had Brian to the right of me and Anwar Richardson to the left of me, and both were probably 8 feet away. You know, and we all wore masks the entire time. And the protocol was very smooth. We went to the loading dock at Royal Memorial Stadium, and they did a temperature check through our wrists, which is the first time I'd encountered that as far as a temperature check. So, I talked to Chris Del Conte yesterday, and I said, were there any hitches? He said, oh, you know, just a couple of hiccups, but everything went pretty smooth. And if you saw the cardboard cutouts on TV, which I know you did, they were placed on that east side as kind of a buffer between the students to the south of them and then to other fans to the north of them, trying to create a little buffer between the two segments. So
smartly done. So but we know the Longhorns are off this weekend. Very big win, 59-3 over UTEP. It didn't tell us everything we needed to know, but the fact that they worked the team that they're supposed to work, to me, is better than that playing down to the competition, Texas, that we've seen in the past.
And we've seen that last weekend from the other Big 12 teams in the schedule, going 0-3 against the Sun Belt, and Texas Tech being pushed to the max by little old Houston Baptist. I don't know how many people knew Houston Baptist had a football team, but this is the same Houston Baptist team that lost to North Texas 57-31, you know, a week before. So it's the Big 12 looked less like a juggernaut, and to me, puts more urgency on the Texas and Oklahomas that if you're going to win this Big 12, you better go undefeated if you want to make it.
I believe that Tech will play better against Texas.
Sure, they always
after the bye week, but
and before, it's at Lubbock.
Yeah, it's at Lubbock. But before we get to the bye week, there are a lot. These guys have responsibilities now, Doug. This coming weekend, there's no football. They're young guys. Are they going to be able to sit at home and hang out in their small groups and avoid large gatherings and house parties and stuff like that? I think it's a really interesting topic. And listen to this exchange I had with Tom Herman on Monday.
Tom, I know it's a unique bye week in that it presents an elevated group of social responsibilities compared to other seasons. How confident are you in your players and your leadership council that things will stay on the straight and narrow till you guys head to Lubbock?
Really confident. I got to be honest with you, Cedric, and this may, I may wake up tomorrow and it bite me in the you know what. But to get to when I look around and I read the news of what other teams are dealing with all across the country, I tell our guys every day how proud I am of them every day. And it's them, they're doing it. And it's nothing. Yeah. We're educating and we're telling them and we're stressing the importance of being diligent and, you know, taking care of each other as well as yourself. But I'm sure other teams, other coaching staffs across the country are saying the same thing. And our level of buy-in, by our players, and not just, it's not just a matter of belief and buy-in. It's a matter of then you got to go do it. And doing it is the hard part because it is so inconvenient. It is so abnormal, the things that these guys have to do to maintain a level of security within our program. You know, it's difficult, and it's going to continue to get difficult, probably get even more difficult. And but the original question was how confident I am that we can maintain this level of diligence. I'm extremely confident knowing what I've seen here the last 6-7 weeks.
So, Duck, he is extremely confident that his guys are going to be compliant and that they're going to continue to win this battle against the COVID.
He is, and Sam Mellinger was saying the same things on Saturday night, and some of the players we talked to on Tuesday also said, no, the leadership is strong, and as you and I both know, it doesn't take many to stray and to put everybody at risk. So it's going to be an ongoing concern, if you will. It doesn't necessarily have to be a problem, but like you said, they're 18, 21-year-old kids. And it's not just, you know, going to parties and stuff like this. I mean, you can catch this anywhere, and they're off this weekend. So how many of them are going home, and they're going to be around parents and siblings who are, you know, coming into contact with other people. So the risk is there. And we know Tom Herman is well aware of it, but they sure seem to be approaching it the right way.
You know what, Duck, I think, And I know Tom, we didn't talk to Tom about this, but if I was Tom, I would have encouraged his kids to stay home, stay here, stay in town.
Right.
Stay in town. Don't go back to your hometown when your friends hear that you're in town and, oh my God, you're back. Let's get together. Mm-hmm. Let's hang out. I haven't seen you in a while. You play great this weekend. And so all of a sudden you're in a social setting with people you haven't been around and you don't know who they've been around. And that's how it gets spread.
It doesn't take much to just ignite
one,
the
wall. One guy can get exposed 50 people.
I talked to John Bianco yesterday. I said, how many active cases do y'all have right now? And he said zero. And Texas
that's
Tech,
amazing.
I reached out to Texas Tech yesterday. They had 6 active cases. But they're a program that had, I think, 75, you know, since July. So, you know, there's that old herd
immunity.
And LSU's Ed Orgeron is subscribing to that as well.
You know, I don't know, Duck, but my wife works with has a former coworker who said her daughter just came down with it for the second time. It's a different strain of COVID. So we don't know. Just that herd mentality might work both ways. The strain may have changed. It's kind of like the flu, so I'm not sure if that would give me any comfort. I can't believe Orgeron said that. I just thought that was cool. Well, most of our guys already had it, so way to go, Coach.
Yeah, I even got my flu shot like a week ago. I don't know if you've had your flu shot. They're encouraging people to get their flu shots earlier this year.
I didn't get it last year, and I'm not getting it this year. I just don't want to be around people.
Do you not get the flu shot normally?
Why are you asking me that?
I'm just asking.
How many times have we walked downstairs at the Statesman together without making an appointment and know they love us and gotten that flu shot from the HEB doctor?
Okay, so let me ask you a question. Is there greater risk you going to CVS and having one pharmacist masked up with you masked up, giving you a flu shot, than there is staying at home and saying, well, I just don't want to get exposed to anybody? I would encourage you to get that shot.
That's a good question, but I'm to the point right now that I don't want them injecting any kind of sickness inside of me in this climate. Because you get they put a little flu in you.
Sure.
For those antibodies. So Bev and I talked about it, and I think we're going to take a pass on it this year.
So Bev's not going to get a shot either.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay.
So, but getting back to the Horns, Duck, one bright spot, and they are on a night of many, and this is a guy who's been through it. Joshua Moore, first play from scrimmage, 78-yard house call, and immediately, you think, wow, they have another weapon. And then when you juxtapose it with with Jake Smith being out with a injury, and the oft-injured Jordan Whittington being hurt again, it makes me feel a little bit better about that receiving core, especially with those newcomers, Tariq Black and Brendan Schooler.
I feel very encouraged by their receiver room, and I think it's one of the best they've had in quite a while. You mentioned Jake Smith, who I think will be back for Texas Tech. Whittington, as you said, had a knee injury and is probably out 3 to 4 weeks. But like Joshua Moore, he looked great on that first catch and showed some wheels. He told me yesterday, he said, I think I'm the fastest guy on the team. You look at Tariq Black, the Michigan transfer, looked good, needs better ball security, but he looked tough. You look at Brendan Schooler, the Oregon receiver who was hoping to play at Arizona this year until they canceled football. He looked good, made a couple big catches. And then we can't forget Kai Money, the walk-on from South Padre Island, the all-name team. And, you know, he looked better than Brennan Eagles the first half. And give Brennan Eagles credit, he didn't
foul. He was ready.
Second half, and he had a great circus catch, as well as Marcus Washington, one of my favorites, had a very acrobatic catch. So I feel very comfortable with Texas receivers, even with Whittington out and Jake Smith maybe not 100% yet.
And you think about it, Moore is very intriguing. And I don't remember ever talking to him, but he met with us on Tuesday. And what I hear from him is he's a very thankful kid for what he has been through and having another chance to show what he can do at the University of Texas. Check out what he said.
I mean, that year and a half was a long, long, long year and a half, you know, being away from doing, you know, what I love, which is playing football. To be honest, man, every game that I did not play in last year, I cried because, you know, just me being who I am, I love football, grew up around football. You know, coming here was my dream, and just to know that I almost, you know, threw that away, it hurt me. So I was disappointed in myself at first, but I also learned that, you know, I'm a strong individual. I learned that I have an awesome support system. I learned that some of my friends weren't really my friends. You know, I took a lot away from it. I'm thankful it happened, and you know. I'm glad to be back, man.
Duck, what I hear in that is hunger and gratitude, because Tom Herman could have said, you know what, you're a troublemaker. You can go play somewhere else. You can go play junior college ball. Mm-hmm. But Tom gave him a shot, and now he's making the most of it.
And that's all any of us can do after making mistakes, try to atone for them and do better. And to me, when we listened to him Tuesday, he showed a lot of personal growth, a lot of accountability. He didn't shy away. He said, hey, I deserved what I got. He said, Coach Herman, as we heard, he said, you know, could have kicked me off the team at any point, but he didn't. It showed he cared about me. And yes, he, for those cynics who say, well, yeah, he's got talent. You know, you don't kick off somebody with talent.
Hey, yeah. I agree. Why do you think B.J. Foster's still on the team?
Exactly.
If the fourth string offensive tackle raised a ruckus,
yeah,
he can kick rocks. He's probably gone. But B.J. Foster started games. B.J. Foster's made plays.
Yeah,
B.J. Foster's got to make some plays this season. Herman's smart enough to know, but B.J.'s got to get his temper together. Yeah, he's got to rechannel his passions in the right way.
He's a little too volatile, and that's kind of the player he is. He's a very physical, aggressive hitter in that secondary, and, you know, he's running second team behind Chris Brown, a strong safety, and that didn't sit well. But he's got to show more maturity, and Joshua Moore would be a good role model for B.J. Foster. And the other one's DeMarvion Overshown. We visited with him on Tuesday, and I think you're going to write about him. And, you know, here's a guy who is undersized, kind of a lanky kid at sophomore. And he said he pulled Coach Herman aside and said, how best can you use me? And so now he's at linebacker and showing up as well. And like you said, he's grateful for the chance too. And it's all about making the most of your opportunity when it comes along.
You know, my favorite player on that defense to talk to is Keandre Colburn. I just I get a big kick out of Keandre Colburn. He's cool. He's funny, and he's very, very bright. And he answers the questions with honesty and integrity. He kind of, you know, remember, I like Chris Nelson, big Chris Nelson. I liked him as well.
Puna Ford, too.
And Puna, but Puna did lie to us one time about a team meeting. Puna, did y'all have a team meeting? No, we did not. Connor Williams, y'all have a team meeting? Yeah, we did. We did. We met. So, yeah, I'll always remember that about my guy Puna. I think Keandre Colburn maybe gets overlooked because he's occupying a lot of blockers when he's in the middle, and some, you know, sometimes they move him out to the edge. But I really like him. I think that the front four is going to be better than any of us thought if they stay healthy. But I'm still holding out judgment on them. I'm not about to throw them a parade because they shut down UTEP.
Well, and you're right. I was a little disappointed in both the O-line and the defensive line. The O-line kept Sam upright, but the running game, they had 13 runs of 3 yards or less and only had like 3 rushes beyond 10 yards. It didn't look all that explosive. And the D-line, like I say, the only pass sack was from quarterback sack was from Alfred Collins, who we all love. I think All-American candidate is this guy next year, maybe. I mean, he's – you know, he's just huge. And Keandre mentioned, oh, the dude's a monster. We call ourselves the big dogs, and he's already a big dog.
So. And he's talking about how good he is at basketball, and that's a dead giveaway. If someone's good at basketball at that size, you know he's an athlete.
An athlete, got good feet and balance. And, I feel a little better about the defensive line than I did going into this season. But, you know, Taquan Graham is really going to bring it big time. And
come on, TQ.
And Osai was good, but I don't know if he flashed as much as I thought he would.
The professor didn't flash. I think he'll flash in Lubbock.
Yeah.
But he didn't flash against UTEP. And I think he's going to have to learn the art of relentlessness at that position, because that position is just all about passion and honor. To me, the defensive end position, Duck, is like Dennis Rodman on a rebound. Dennis Rodman was going to go get the ball. He was going to go rebound that ball. And it didn't matter if the guys that he was going against were bigger, and they often were bigger or stronger than him. He was still going to pull down 14 or 15 rebounds a night. And defensive end is about going hard on every single play. And he's going to have to learn that. You can pick your spots at linebacker, Duck. But at DN, and especially in a Big 12 where they pass all the time, mm-hmm. He's going to have to learn to rev that motor up 100%. He might be playing hard at about 85%. Right. I could see him go harder than he did.
I don't know who else kind of jumped out at you. I thought it was good to see some production from tight ends. You know, Cade Brewer and Braden Lightrock each had a couple catches. So
Josh Thompson stood out.
Yeah, he was all
over the place.
He could be a star. He had the big ear laceration, and Tom Herman said, you don't want to know how many stitches he had, so, which is weird, wearing a helmet and all. But still a little bit worried about linebacker as well. Don't know what you saw from Juwan Mitchell. Court Jacques, the former walk-on, is continuing to impress, so it's good to get some production out of him. What did you see out of Caden Stearns' game?
He was quiet, I thought he was pretty quiet, but you got to remember who they were playing.
Mm-hmm.
So the opportunity to make plays isn't always there when a team can't move the ball on you and you're the safety and you're basically the quarterback back there. He kept things in order, but, you know, they're going to be asking – a lot more is going to be asked of him moving forward. But this was a game where he didn't flash, but I don't know that meant that he played badly, but I just don't remember – I don't remember going, oh, wow, did you see what Caden Stearns just did? I don't remember doing that.
It didn't seem like they blitzed very much either. They didn't have to. They did what they had to do. They did what they were supposed to do. They didn't have to show much, which was their plan all along. So, all in all, to me, they checked off a lot of things off the list. And I didn't see anything from Saturday that made me think, oh, I don't know, this could be trouble. So, like you said, the bandwagon's taking all comers on, and especially how the rest of the Big 12 looked. I think that wagon may be getting a little fuller, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I believe so, too. And before we get to John McClain, one question. Texas Tech gave up 567 yards passing to Houston Baptist. Is Sam Ellinger just going to go in there and light them up, and Texas is going to be 2-0 in a couple of weeks? Is that what you see happening?
Yeah, I really do. I think now that's a different place, as we all know. It always seems like kind of Halloween, you know, out there on the high plains. But and Texas Tech will play a lot better. Matt Wells is a good coach, but that was not a good showing from the Red Raiders. So I expect them to do better. But I think there's a seriousness to this Texas team as far as taking care of business. They know, you know, I've heard a lot of these, you know, time's running out. This is Sam Ellinger's last go around, you know, and I know he could come back for another year, but you and I both know he's not going to. So if he wants to get it done, he's got to, you know, take care of business every Saturday. And I think he will.
On Second Thought.
You know, Duck, it's always a great, great time on the podcast when we can talk to our friend John McClain of the Houston Chronicle and our co-member of the Texas Sports Hall of Fame selection committee. Y'all got me on. What's up, John?
Hey, guys, how are you? Thanks for having me as always.
Man, it's good to see you. Have you recovered from that trip to Kansas City yet? Auspicious debut for the Texans, wouldn't you say?
Well, it's the same way they've debuted the last 4 years and five of the last six, losing their first game. I was more interested in the atmosphere, the protest, seeing what the press box was like, everything about the game in these unprecedented times. And them only having 15,000 and change on fans worked out real well. The way they had them spread out, I think we'll see more and more teams adding fans, because the Chiefs and the Jaguars did it. The Jaguars couldn't get they couldn't sell all their minimal amount of tickets. And people said they didn't go to that one since they beat Indianapolis.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And like you said, fans were there, but those fans booed the two teams when they're locking arms at midfield in the pregame. What'd you make of that?
Alcohol. There was no reason to boo fans like that. There were so many bad reports, as there usually is in the media. They were talking about they booed the Texans for staying in the locker room for the two national anthems. Well, they booed them when they came out for pregame warmups. They booed them when they went back in.
Mm-hmm.
And I tweeted they should have cheered them after they blew that lead up there in the playoffs. They should have
loved them.
Ovation.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. Houston should be their favorite team. They let them back in and allowed them to win a Super Bowl. It doesn't get any easier after that loss. You got the Baltimore Ravens coming into Houston on Sunday, and we know what challenge that presents. But the elephant in the room, John, I've been wanting to talk to you all offseason about this. GM Bill O'Brien dealt star receiver DeAndre Hopkins to Arizona for running back David Johnson, who's averaged like 3.5 yards a carry over the last 3 years, for a second rounder in 2020, a fourth rounder in 2021. He sent DeAndre and a fourth rounder to the Cardinals. DeAndre Hopkins debuted in Arizona, 14 catches for $150. He's DeAndre Hopkins still. What's the mood in Houston? Because we all watch the scoreboard and we see those stat sheets. Brandon Cooks and Will Fuller, is that going to be a mesh for to replace a guy like DeAndre Hopkins?
Well, Fuller had over 100 yards and 8 catches in his first game. When Fuller played last year, they averaged 6 more points a game than they did when he didn't, and Hopkins played every game. And so the key for Fuller is to stay healthy. Brandon Cooks, Randall Cobb, David Johnson, I count him among the receivers because he may be the best receiver in the league out of the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
He averaged 10.7 yards a catch, which I think is his career average. And you guys know when you get a back average and you double figures, he's good. And Johnson averaged 7.7 yards a carry, but because they got down so much in the third quarter, he couldn't carry the ball more. He was the only thing I saw positive about the offense other than backup tight end Jordan Akins. And the Texans looked like a team with some new players that was playing in the middle of the preseason, probably the second preseason game. The Chiefs, who are the defending Super Bowl champions, looked like a Super Bowl champion, one penalty for 5 yards and no turnovers. And the only significant player they have who's new is Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and he played a great game. He had 138 yards rushing. Texans run defense. I am mystified. What's happened to them against the run. In O'Brien's first 5 years, they were never worse than 13th. In 2018, when they started 0-3 and finished 11-5, they gave up 81 yards a game rushing. They were third in the league. And through 9 games last year, they gave up 84. They were great. Then they play Baltimore. They get beat 41-7, give up 256 yards rushing. And in the 10 games since that Baltimore game, counting the playoffs and counting the Kansas City game, they're giving up 164 yards a game. They couldn't stop the clock.
Yeah, there's so much to unwrap from that trade and from the game. I was impressed with David Johnson. I think he's going to have a good year. Do you think so, John?
He stays healthy. One of the things people say, well, he hadn't done anything since 2016. And I don't call him nincompoops, but 2 years ago he stayed healthy. He had 1,381 yards rushing and receiving and 10 touchdowns. The Texans would take that, because he'd be like Carlos Hyde last year, rotating with Duke Johnson. Now, Duke Johnson's out with an ankle injury, first time in his career. He's been hurt. So there'd be more of an onus on Johnson, as there should be, because when he's healthy, he's been good. He missed 3 games last year with an injury, parts of 2 more. Cliff Kingsbury benched him. And so in 2017, he suffered a broken wrist in the first game and missed the season. So his problem has just been staying healthy. He's definitely motivated. As far as Hop played the way he's always played. Now, that was a career high, 14 catches, but he got that new contract. They're going to get the most out of him, and he played great, just like he did here. And right now, it's a lopsided trade on the Cardinals' behalf, but they use that second-round pick on defensive end Ross Blacklock. He's way behind, like all rookies are, other Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And they also, because they got the second-round pick from Arizona, they traded their two to the Rams for Cooks. So people here are ready to jump off the ledge. They're ready. Well, they always want O'Brien fired. They want him fired.
Always.
And that's not going to change. And maybe if they bomb out, which I don't think they will with Watson at quarterback, then maybe he'll get fired. But I was asked this morning if he was on the hot seat. And I said, after one game, are you kidding me? Don't you keep up with what's going on with the Texans in the past?
Well, as far as the trade, the way you look at it, John, you've been covering them forever. You know, it got panned nationally, as you know. How would you rate the trade, maybe, I don't know, in Texan history?
Well, the trade was terrible. Everybody thought so. Players, everybody. Right. Fans locally, nationally, O'Brien still gets killed. And now because Arizona beat San Francisco and Hop had such a great game, he's getting killed all over again. And so for now, it's a lopsided trade. But 3 years from now, you don't know. You don't know what Blacklock's going to be. You don't know what they're going to use their fourth-round pick. Cooks is looked at as a part of that deal. But right now, it is a terrible trade.
Right.
I worry about the Texans with this schedule. John, I mean, it is
you and everybody else.
It's horrendous. You got Baltimore this week, and then you go to Heinz Field to play the Steelers, and Big Ben's rejuvenated. Minnesota comes in October 4th. Never an easy deal, and the way they're stopping the run, here comes Dalvin Cook. Good luck with that one. Jacksonville, not a pushover. Tennessee. Thanks to Vic Fangio's horrible clock management. And then October 25th against Green Bay. The Texans have a history of slow starts in seasons, but they could always rely on – they always had DeAndre Hopkins. They had star power. This thing, it could get away from them, right?
I picked them to start 0-3 and finish 10-6 because
that's a
the schedule's
finish.
A whole lot easier after that Green Bay game. The only two teams they play that had winning records last year, Tennessee and New England, they play both of them here. They were 5-3 on the road last year. They were 8-3 in one score games. Cowboys were what, like 1-7? Mm-hmm. So to me, when you win a lot of one score games, tells me you're mentally tough. And they go back to 2018 when they were 0-3, finished 11-5. So they know what it's like to get off to an 0-3 start. I think Baltimore will crush them as the Ravens did last year in Baltimore, 41-7. I don't think it'll be that bad, but I picked them to lose, and I picked them to lose to the Steelers. Then I picked them to start one and after an 0-3 start 1-3 because I think they'll beat the Vikings.
Is that the toughest schedule in the league or just the toughest?
By far the toughest first four games based on last season's records, 44-20. Those four teams are. None of them had a losing record. Pittsburgh was 8-8, and that was without Ben Roethlisberger, and he threw three touchdown passes in that Monday night victory over the Giants. So, yeah, I think if the Texans could be 1-3 after that murderer's row, they should feel pretty good about themselves.
I'm really intrigued with this team because I watched some of the game, and you're right. Will Fuller, when Will Fuller is right, mm-hmm. I mean, he's a dangerous dude.
Dynamic.
But can you get him through those first four or five games before those hammies go out? He's a soft tissue nightmare. Deshaun Watson, I didn't get to see a whole lot as far as the pass protection is concerned. Did he take a lot of hits against Kansas City? Because that's the part that I don't remember as much.
He was sacked four times for 11 yards. To me, that's not a big deal when you're getting sacked four times for 11 yards. Problem was he was having to run too much. Right side of their offensive line, right tackle Titus Howard, and right guard Zach Fulton were terrible. And they played against two good guys, Chris Jones and Frank Clark, and they ate them up. Mm-hmm. Everybody's blasting the line, which is not fair because center Nick Martin, left guard Max Sharping, and left tackle Laramie Tunsil did a good job. Problem was coming from the other side. And last year when they played the Ravens knocked him down 10 times, had eight tackles for loss. Matthew Judon, who was their franchise player, he had two sacks, four hits, three tackles for loss, and a fumble recovery, and he'll be lined up opposite Titus Howard. I understood Howard having a tough start against Frank Clark. He hadn't played since midway through last season, didn't have a preseason, of course. He had two operations, one on his knee, one on his hand, and he'll play better because in the first eight games last year, he played like a guy who was a number one pick, made the all-rookie team based on that small sample size. But if Zach Fulton continues to screw up, I'd think about putting him on the bench and bringing in one of these other guys who couldn't play any worse. So I'm writing about for Friday about the tempo and how when they were down 31-7 and they were letting too much time click off the clock. Bill O'Brien disagreed with me today. He thought the pace was good, but I've got evidence to show that it was not. They have to play faster. They don't want Watson spending all his time at the line of scrimmage, directing traffic, looking to the right, looking to the left, looking behind him, moving players around. Just go up there and snap the ball and let him play.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's one of the best players in the league. We all know that. And he agreed to a new contract. Did that surprise you? Everybody wants security. But after the trade with DeAndre Hopkins, is there any thought that, well, maybe I'll just play out my contract and go somewhere else where I have a better chance to win a championship?
Absolutely not. Players don't think like that because, number one, they couldn't because they can get franchised up to 3 years. Right. I remember after the Hopkins trade, Vegas said the favorite to have Watson in 2021 was New England, and I had talk shows ask me, I said, what kind of nitwit would think something like that? He's under contract for two more years. They could franchise in 3 years,
right.
So he couldn't go, and they're going to sign him to almost $40 million a year, and I was right. Mm-hmm. I wasn't the only one that said it. I knew he would be number two to Mahomes. If Lamar Jackson wins a Super Bowl this year, and I picked them to go to the Super Bowl against the Saints and the Saints to win, but if Jackson – wins a Super Bowl, he could be paid more on average than Mahomes. If he doesn't win a Super Bowl, I think he'll be number two to Mahomes, and Watson will be number three in average salary. And Watson, you know, for people who think players don't play it out because they can be franchised, they want to get paid. They right. could have paid DeAndre Hopkins if they wanted to, but he wanted a $10 million a year raise, and they weren't going to do it because they had to sign. Their goal was to get Watson and Laremy Tunsil. And one of the things they've showed in the contracts they've given their players, if you work hard, you're a good guy and a good teammate, and you produce, you got a chance to have a financial windfall because they've made Watson number two in history, Tunsil number one offensive lineman in history, gave Zach Cunningham, inside linebacker, $58 million. And so Whitney Merciless, after he led the team in sacks, he's 30, but they gave him a new deal. So they will pay people who produce, and Hopkins' deal, they weren't going to redo it with 3 years left and give them a $10 million year raise. And the reason they didn't get a number one pick, they tried every team. Most teams won't redo deals with 3 years left, and Arizona agreed to do it.
And is Deshaun Watson okay with the direction that the franchise is going? Is he all in, you feel like, mentally?
He says he's all in all the time. When we ask him, he's got a new play caller in Tim Kelly. I think Tim Kelly and Anthony Weaver, their defensive coordinator, calling plays for the first time. Those guys needed a preseason just like the players. And I don't think either one of them distinguished themselves right off, and I didn't expect them to. Mm-hmm. I picked the Chiefs to win 37-27. They won, what was it, 30 – what was the final score, 30? I don't even remember what the final score was. 34-20.
Yeah.
34-20, that's what it was.
Right.
And I think I'll pick this one about 33 to maybe 20, 21, something like that. So it's going exactly the way I figured it would. The key is once they get past this bad start, then will it go the way I think it will when they'll get on a roll against lesser teams.
So you think Watson and O'Brien have a good working relationship, and they're on the same page?
Watson has defended him even when we don't ask him.
That's telling. That's telling. You think 10-6 is gonna win the AFC South?
Cedric, I picked Tennessee and Houston to go 10-6, and I have the Titans win the division on a tiebreaker, and the Texans earning a wild card. And I think I picked Indy 9-7. And Jacksonville, Doug Marrone has control of personnel over there without being the GM, as O'Brien did last year here. And when you see them getting rid of players, it's because Marrone doesn't think they fit the culture there. And for one game at least, you know, they're celebrating over there. Doug Marrone, I like him a lot. I'm glad he won that game. You know, that to me was still a bigger upset than Washington beating Philadelphia, but because everybody picked Jacksonville to be the worst team in the league, tanking for Trevor. And now they got the mustache coming off 3 touchdowns and no interceptions.
Everybody loves the mustache. But what about Brandon Cooks? So, what are we going to see from him? Is he going to be the alpha receiver, or is that going to be Fuller's role?
It should be Fuller because Fuller's been here now. This is his 5th year, last year of his contract. He's got a chance to be one of those players to cash in here if he stays healthy and produces the way we think he will. But he has never come close to doing what Brandon Cooks did. Brandon Cooks had 4 consecutive 1,000-yard seasons, helped the Rams go to the Super Bowl in 18 last year. He had a career-low 42 catches, and he's off to a 2-catch, 20-yard start. And so people are ready to throw in the towel on Brandon Cooks after one game. It amazes me. Maybe it's because I'm covering the NFL for 44 years. It's how many people panic after one game. And it's not what you do in September and October in NFL. It's what you do in November and December. That is a tried and true adage.
Do you think he's healthy? I know he had that hamstring.
He's got a quad problem that's been bothering him since before he got here. They took it easy on him in camp, but I watched him practice a lot. He said it's not an issue, but I think most players would say their injuries aren't an issue. So I don't know. I think if it were an issue, the doctors would not have let them put him out there because to make it worse, he could miss 6 weeks.
Yeah. Any big surprises after 1 week in the league that you saw?
Washington and Jacksonville being in first place, Arizona beating the NFC Super Bowl team in Santa Clara, the 49ers. Right. To me, those were the 3 biggest. I wasn't surprised about Cam Newton and the Patriots. Wasn't surprised about Drew Brees. I thought Tom Brady would play better, and he's got too many talented players not to play better. But sometimes we lose sight of the fact he's 43 years old. Right. He doesn't have a fastball anymore. You know, he's a kind of a junk pitcher, which is not what Bruce Arians' offense was. He's had to adjust that offense from holding the ball, waiting for his great receivers to get open down the field, to be more of a rhythm offense, which is what Brady has always done. But I tell you one thing, Brady's not used to getting criticized after a game by a head coach, and Arians will do that, and he did it to Tom Brady. That tells you nobody is immune.
Yeah.
I love that. And Belichick was the same way. I mean, he'd get after Brady as well. But we could talk NFL all day, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about your Baylor Bears, who are starting out the season against the Houston Cougars in a hastily arranged get-together on Saturday. I just got my credentials, and I'm going to be there. Can they keep Charlie Brewer upright this season? And if not, how bad things going to be under Aranda?
A lot of problems for Brewer and his concussions were self-inflicted. He holds the ball too long.
True.
They got to get him to get rid of the ball. And when he's running, he's got to go out of bounds, go down. Don't try to run over anybody.
That bowl game hit, John, was brutal.
Mm-hmm. He's doing what Robert Griffin did and did in the NFL too. That they just don't want to go down, throw it away, live for another play. So you hope Larry Fedora, who's the offensive coordinator, has worked with him on that to try to get him to do it. Because if he gets one more concussion, he might be done with college football and then just go into the real world. But if Brewer can stay healthy, Baylor should be good. It's their defense that should be an issue. They only have three starters coming back. They got some transfers, but I'm skeptical until I see them. University of Houston wishes it still had Derek King, has gone to Miami. I believe he'll be a candidate to win the Heisman. And because that kid can run and throw, he and Dana Holgorsen didn't see eye to eye, even though that's not what came out. And so the last game I covered working for the Waco Tribune Herald in September of 76 was University of Houston's first game in the Southwest Conference. They beat Baylor 23-5. I was there 2 weeks later. I told David Campbell I was going to the Chronicle and came to the Chronicle in middle October, but I'll never forget that game, and I hope now Baylor can get some revenge.
Nice to see Dave Aranda get off to a good start, good guy, and hell of a defensive player.
People seem to like him a lot. I haven't met him, but I know a lot of people that have. Plus, I know all the media people really like and respect him. He's treated him very well. He's pretty low-key for a defensive coordinator. You know, most of those guys, they're spitting and blowing snot on people because they're so fired up, and he's pretty cool customer.
He really is. He is as low-key and cerebral as a defensive guy you'll see. We'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about former Longhorn Omenihu. What are your expectations from Charles this year?
Charles did not play a good game in his first game as a starter. One of the reasons they let Angelo Blackson go, they thought Charles was ready to step in it right in. He did. He played 40-something percent of the snaps, didn't register anything. But he's only got one way to go. They're really fired up about him after training camp, and he'll get better. Last year he was used mostly as a pass rusher, but he's got to prove he can play the run. But let me tell you, all he did was fall in line with a bunch of guys that can't play the run.
Right. Well, I look forward to seeing you this weekend. I'm sure we'll be spaced properly.
We'll be spread out in Kansas City. I like to have a lot of room anyway. And where they put the visiting media, there's 13 seats on the second row, and there were only five. So it was great. And that's the way it'll be at NRG Stadium too. And only issue I had after the game, it was too loud trying to do Zooms and hear the Texans when you had people on close enough talking to Andy Reid and his players. So the Texans will do a really good job about transcribing quotes like they always do.
Right. I guess I should bring a sack lunch, I guess.
No, they're going to have food. They're going to have a cooler full of water and drinks. The only difference in the food, it'll be like it has been. You can't get it yourself. They'll have people serving it to you. So, no, you don't need to bring that sack lunch.
Well, I look forward to seeing you and seeing the Texans up close, and I'll see
you. Okay, Kirk, travel safe. I can help you with anything, let me know. Cedric, thank you very much, as always. Always fun to come on with you guys.
The great John McClain, ladies and gentlemen. Always a pleasure, John, and stay safe, brother, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, guys.
See you, John. Bye-bye.
Take care.
On Second Thought.
That will do it for episode 192 of On Second Thought. We got to thank our guy, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, for joining us. For the Duck Kirk Bowles, I'm Cedric Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Sed and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.